So, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Thursday evening. As it's much lighter than it used to be at this time, so because the season's changing and even since this afternoon, the wind has come up, and as we say in French, le vent se lève, and it's could be getting stormy. I don't know. Things change, as we know. I was thinking today about this. The story from the Buddha's old, one of the sutras about it, which we've talked a lot about the woman whose child has died and is grieving. And the Buddha says, I can, I can solve your, no, I can't solve your problem. He said something like, I can bring your son back to life or something like that. If you bring me a mustard seed from a home where no one has died. And of course, we know the story is that she very eagerly goes and knocks on the doors. And everyone has lost someone. That whether it's a grandparent, a partner, a child, a sibling, everyone, every door she knocks on says, oh, I would love to give you a mustard seed because mustard seeds are very common in Indian cooking. But no, I have lost someone here. So eventually she, I think maybe what the Buddha says to her is something like, I can put an end to your grieving or something. So eventually, she realizes this web of communal loss. Everyone has lost someone, and that's what they share. And so, and they all belong to this web of loss and grief. And that changes everything for her. And she buries her son in the forest, her baby son, and goes back and becomes a follower of the Buddha. And I was thinking about this because of this certain the moment in which we are living, in which there is so much crisis and so much grief and so much loss and so many emotions, whether it's around the environment, whether it's around war, geopolitical situations, or just our own individual lives. Several people around me, including myself, have aging mothers, and so they're taking care of them. They are dealing with this, great, my mother's almost 98. Someone else who was telling me his mother is 93, I think. And so confronting this old age, sickness and death, right? Because at the age of 98, it's a fair bet that you are closer to death than when you are 38. Although we never know. And I think when, so someone was telling me recently about their mother who was complicated, very old and sickly, and taking care of her, and the siblings aren't really participating, and all kinds of things. And he told me the whole story. And then he said, he kind of stopped and he looked at me and he said, I was hoping you would tell me what to do. I said, well, Zen doesn't tell us what to do. Apart from, practicing with what is right before your eyes. and responding to the appropriate moment. So my appropriate moment is I have a cat who's scratching at the door and wants to go out. Excuse me, just one moment. So that was responding to just what was here. And so then what does that say about how does that relate to the story of the mustard seed then? If we just respond to what's right before our eyes, and not reject feeling grief. Not reject an end to grief, not reject death, not reject birth, and yet wanting to be free from birth and death. Because as soon as we say birth, well, then we're implying death. Every living entity that is born will die. We know that. So how can we be free from birth and death in the midst of birth and death? This was the great question from Dogen. And it's almost like instead of being free from birth and death, it is being free with birth and death, something like that. In the midst of birth and death. And in our current moment, where we're confronted with so many. So much violence and destruction, also confronted with many beautiful things as well. But we tend to become very emotional about the loss, the destruction, the aggression, the violence, the death, rather than celebrating the births. Although we do celebrate the births as well. And when we were recently in, so last week in Coimbra, at the end of the retreat on Sunday morning, we did a circle practice, which we always do at some point during the retreat. And there was a particularity about this retreat in that everyone except one person had been there before. So there was only one person who was there for the first time. And this is quite unusual. And there was another person who we had not been at one of our retreats for 7 or 8 years, since before COVID. But other than that, it was the community. Everyone's familiar with each other. Everyone knows the place. Everyone knows what to do. They just, practice what is appropriate for that moment according to, if they're ringing the bell, then they do that. If they're cooking, they do that. If they're chant leader, they do that. If they clean the toilets, they do that. Everyone just responded to what was needed to be done. And it's not that that's not what usually happens in our retreats. The different character, I would say, is that it was so familiar for everyone because, most people had been there for 15 years or something, at least. And so there we could have this idea that, oh, we all know each other. Nothing is new, except for the new woman. But I gave the Orioka instructions to the two people who needed it. And then one or two other people who don't often do Orioka came to have instructions too. And it was new for me. I try to maintain the not knowing, and so responding to the people in front of me in the appropriate moment and the situation, and offer the instructions to Oriyoki like it was the first time, something like that. And so there was a detachment from the Oriyoki instructions, while at the same time penetrating the Oriyoki instructions, something like that. So not fixed on a way that they should be given, what words to say, things like that. Letting go of that, detaching from all of the ideas, and yet being fully in that moment of giving Oriyoki instructions. It's not possible to be fully present and penetrating the Oriyoki instructions if I am hanging on to some idea of the Oriyoki instructions. And that's true of everything we do. Which means, the complete practice of this great way is to let go, as we know. Let go while also completely penetrating. So it's again, it sounds like a paradox, right? To completely let go and yet completely dive in. And one is not possible without the other. If we don't let go, we can't dive in. We'll be hanging onto something. It's like, the koan with the man hanging from a branch by his teeth. If someone's asking a question and he doesn't let go of that branch, he can't answer. And if he wants to answer the question, he has to let go of that branch. And the koan says, if he doesn't, he will lose his life. We think it's the opposite. We think, oh, if I let go, I'm going to die. But actually, if you hang on, you're going to die. You're losing your life. So how does that relate to our moment? And that circle that we had was really also the odd thing about the circle was I was the last one. It was complete accident that the person next to me started. Person to my left started the circle. And so I was the last one. I don't think I'm ever the last one, or rarely the last one in a circle. And so that was a different experience too. That was receiving everything that was being said, completely receiving it, letting, I had to completely detach from ideas, as we know, in the circle, in order to completely fully penetrate what was being said. And I felt touched in a way that, of course, every circle is different, but I felt deeply touched by what was being said, no matter what it was, no matter who was speaking. And there were very different things said, of course. Different languages. I think two people spoke in Portuguese, so someone translated for me. Because we don't share what has been said in the circle, I can't share with you what was said, but it was all just. It was like we all shared whatever was being said. That was our web of communal belonging, what was being said. And I felt it really deeply. Although what was being said, I didn't have those particular experiences. But the human being one with whatever it is mine. Now maybe this was possible in a different way because all most of us know each other so well in that group that was present, and we know the place so well. So yeah, it was but that too, I had to let go of that, knowing the place, knowing the people. And I feel like everyone who I know, I feel like they said something that was completely new, never said before, And that practice is also, Dogen's other thing of, Dogen saw the world or life, the world maybe, or life, as really a moment by moment dying process. Which means it's also a moment by moment birthing process. The moment dies and then the moment is born. And with that, just a second. Someone's calling me. If we can fully be present to that, and our world is full of that at this moment, we're watching the earth and the life on earth dying. We think of nature as being, the plants and trees and things, but it's us too, It was interesting that the astronauts who went to the moon just this week, one of them said something like at the very beginning when they first got a view of the Earth from the spaceship, when they got a full view of the Earth, one of them said, "It's so clear from here." Something like it's so clear that we are, that all of us are so different and yet we're all one there, or something like that. We all share our home or something like that. Which is, it's not surprising that when you get a view like that, you see the planet differently and you see the inhabitants of the planet differently. And I'm sure that they had other experiences too that we cannot even begin to imagine, as we are, we're so close. We can't take the step back and see the planet like they could, And even that, where they were, not with concretely on the ground on the planet, they are still not anywhere else. That where they are too is here. And the distance is a measure, it's a concept. And yet, can we be, if we can free ourselves from those concepts, we can truly see that we're one. Something like that, because it is the concepts that block us and keep us from experiencing what we share, who we really are, what we really are. So if we're sitting in the circle, the talking and listening circle, and we're saying, "Oh, that's not me," where someone's talking, "That's not me, that's not my life. I don't know anything they're talking about. I don't know those people. I don't know that situation. I don't feel that at this moment." If it's all no, well, then we have a completely different experience than if we just drop all that and just receive fully, just open and receive whatever it is. And this is to what it is to practice with what is right before our eyes. Just this. I also had this have this ongoing issue with my eyes since the workshop that we did in Montreuil with the colored glasses. And so, it got worse. And because I was traveling so much, I had to go see an urgent care eye doctor, who was bad. And didn't really do anything conclusive. And then the pharmacy gave me something else. And then, so finally, when I came back from Portugal, I could go to a proper, I made an appointment before I left for a proper good eye doctor, and who determined that it was a virus and also exacerbated by seasonal allergies. So gave me some treatment for it and everything. But then she, I had said to her, "Yeah, I mean," she said, "Well, how did it start?" And I said, "Well, it started when I said I was doing a kind of theater-like workshop, and I had to wear masks. We had to wear a mask, and as soon as I put that mask on, it just started itching like crazy, you know, and I didn't realize it in the beginning, but it was later in the day on the first day, and it just got worse every time I put on the masks. And so she said, "Oh, well, you know, it's a virus. Probably the person who used the mask before you had had a virus on it or something." I said, "Well, you know, I don't know if anyone used it before or whatever. But in any case, that's an indication of how connected we are and how interdependent we are. We know this with viruses. And that just spreads. Our basic human nature, our basic humanness, makes us susceptible to viruses. The nature of our being is this interdependent, not non-separation. So we're susceptible to viruses." And then I had to deal with this, what was happening, and you know, explain to people why my eyes were bright red, and not excuse myself, but just offer an explanation because everyone was very concerned that my eyes looked so terrible. And it was as if when you can identify it and put a concept on it, then people can be relieved. People would be like, "Oh, okay, yeah, okay." Whereas if they don't know, although it can have the opposite effect. Someone else told me recently that something was, yeah, I forget what it was. They were sick or something. And as soon as, oh yes, it was someone who had great pain. And as soon as a diagnostic was put on it was worse. That when they didn't know what it was not knowing the name of what was causing it was easier in a sense than once you know the name and it sounds horrible. And you can look it up and find all kinds of things about it, right? It's not death, it's not, you know, terminal, but it's painful. So you see how concepts play with us or how our mind plays with concepts. And so we're confronted with, you know, war and all these, you know, the concepts that are being thrown around, they lose all meaning, you know. A ceasefire has no meaning if I mean it's just a word. Right. And how do we then relate to what these concepts are? And what is anything then without becoming fixed by it? Fixed by our ideas and our concepts. And, you know, like the in Taoism, you know, that Lao Tzu said, you know, the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. Or, you know, I talked about this during the because it was Easter and Good Friday and all this during the retreat. So I had a lot of Christian things I was referring to. And Saint Augustine, you know, great Christian thinker. You know, if you can understand it, it isn't God, which sounds like not something the Christians would say, but it's what's happening for us too, you know. The word is not it. So it's like the finger pointing to the moon is not it. It's like grief or death for or loss for the woman who the Buddha sent to get the mustard seeds. As when she could penetrate what it is to truly grieve, to to and penetrate by becoming it and sharing it with others. That's the key, sharing it with others. It changed. It changes. Which, you know, in a sense, I think it's why Thich Nhat Hanh had said that he famously said, you know, the next Buddha or something like that will be the Sangha. And that, or, you know, Al Gore, who 26 years ago said that community is the answer. Understanding, not in a conceptual way, but truly penetrating and realizing this web of interconnection, this web of interdependence, what we share, what's common. That's the way. And if we, you know, if we become caught by our concepts or ideas, then we're not truly experiencing that. So what does that mean for us, you know, in this moment? So how do we truly penetrate war, suffering, aggression, division, environmental pollution, and greed, anger, and ignorance, basically, it comes down to. And we have an indication because in the morning we chant, you know, we atone for whatever sufferings we have caused through our own greed, anger, and ignorance. And that is a truly significant act to become one with it. So maybe I will stop there and see if you have anything to share or questions or how is it for you? Dogen's great way of, what did I say? Dogen said, the great way of, what did I say? The complete practice of the great way. Yeah. Detachment and penetration. Being free from birth and death in the midst of birth and death. We can't be free from it anywhere else. You know, it's like the koan of when, how can you go where it's, be free from heat and cold? Well, you go where there's no heat and cold. When it's hot, you kill yourself with the heat, and when it's cold, you kill yourself with the cold. Same thing.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Roshi. I'll just say something. Yes. I do find these days that you were mentioning the war and what is going on. I do find it's a real challenge to remain connected, open, and at the same time maintain, be aware of where it's becoming toxic and mentally dangerous to expose ourselves to what we can expose ourselves to. And there is a real temptation sometimes to just stop listening to the news or something to protect oneself. I stopped listening to Trump. I just entirely stopped listening to Trump. Just it has no, it's just, and I'm trying to read more than to look at stuff also. I mean, like, I'm trying to find devices, ways, strategies to maintain the contact, to remain informed and aware, and at the same time protect my mental health. And yeah, and it seems like things are crumbling down all around. And so as you were mentioning the astronauts, and it feels like I was thinking, yeah, you need to gain another perspective, and it's a perspective. What is a Zen perspective? It's kind of what came up. It's like, well, it's no perspective in a way. It's like no clinging to perspective. And I feel there's such a polarization. I was speaking with a friend of mine. He was telling me about his brother-in-law and how he's seeing him like moving towards this new kind of trend of masculinity, toxic. How do you call that? Masculinism and all that. And so, wow, I don't know. I find it's a real challenge to find the maintaining this no perspective, no clinging, embracing, becoming, tuning in, welcoming, and at the same time, in this particular times, to maintain what to do, what we need to do to protect our mental health. Yeah. That's what comes up.
Yeah, it's true.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Miguel. Go ahead.
Hello, everyone. yeah, I feel that something similar too. what I think I keep in mind, let's say, and not that I think about it a lot, it's that if we maintain the balance, we help, we are helping. Because I can't do much, so what I can do is not going after fear or my wantings and not wantings or aversion or the detachment from that, and yeah, being present, as Amy Rushi was saying, and keeping in mind this, we are one. If each one of us maintains, not all of us, but maintains the balance, some harmony, and help others, this helps to keep the balance of the world. And I don't know, just what I keep in mind, I think. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. It's funny that the discussion is around this tonight because I just I don't know, I think 1 month ago I canceled my I don't know how you say that, but the possibility to read Le Monde. You know, I was receiving Le Monde, the for like the newspaper, like for I think maybe I don't know, I'm reading Le Monde for like maybe 20 years or maybe 30 years, I don't know. And it's like something I, you know, it's part of me. I don't know. I read Le Monde every morning. It's and the fact is I was reading it because it was on my phone, so I was always reading it. I was reading it a lot because it's every time I had a moment, I was going on Le Monde, and it was so easy to. And I don't know what happened this last month, but I couldn't read like an entire article. I was reading a lot of articles, but I was always stopping at the middle of the article. And I really was very surprised because I've never done that before. And so I decided to quit and to stop. I thought that something was wrong, and because I was reading, I was not reading the newspaper anymore. I couldn't, I think, I couldn't to go through the whole article. And it's crazy because since a month and a half, I read like three books, like very amazing books, and I really deeply read them. And they are really, so I think that something was going very wrong for me, and I'm really like a drug addict. I'm like missing something, like Le Monde. I'm missing Le Monde, really, like, and I really feel it. But the first 3 days, it was like very funny. I was totally like lost. I was taking my phone, but I was not Le Monde anymore. And I even stole Le Monde at Le Conservatoire because someone is receiving it, and I stole it from him without seeing him. And I was so happy in the metro. I wanted to read Le Monde, and what happened is I cannot see anymore, you know, because on my phone I can go bigger. So I was in the metro, but I couldn't read Le Monde because it was written too small. So, and I was not able to read Le Monde anymore. But just saying that, it's okay. So I don't know what I'm going to do because it's very weird to cut the news like that. But as a matter of fact, I'm trying a new way to be able to read something from the world. And like, I need to find a new way. A new
Oh, I can really relate to what you all are saying because, and it also helps me to hear you say it. Sometimes I think, I remember this came up during you, in the beginning of Ukraine, Tomasz said that he wanted to be careful not to project his own depressed thoughts onto the conflict. And I think about it a lot. I mean, to what extent I'm. My worry about my family in the United States doesn't become projected onto the news of the war, say. I mean, I don't want it to get all sort of, I'm down, so here's the reason. Iran is the reason. Make sure that I'm not doing that sort of thing. But I can't, when I hear, I heard Roshi the other day and other people saying at 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, oh, you know what happened? I think, God, you guys have the guts to look at the news in the morning? I'm not up to it. Seriously, it really, really. As recently I've woke up, I've awakened quite jolly. Maybe good dreams. I've had good night's sleep, and the minute by about 11, I think, okay, let's check if anything is. Has anything been decimated? Are we still here and everything? It really inflects on my mood. So, and at the same time, I do not. It was somebody at the weekend, the Five Energies weekend, when I started saying it's getting to me, said, "Oh, I don't follow anymore. I can't do it." I thought, well, I don't want to go there. I have been there in the past. During the Vietnamese War, I couldn't read the newspaper. I just couldn't read it. And I sort of grew, I wanted to grow up enough to be able to look at the headlines and not go into a number, not fall apart or get so mad I couldn't read on or something, which I feel that I've accomplished over 50 years or so. So I want to stay informed, but it's a very delicate balance. And I also have the feeling that it's a feeling that being aware of what's going on and at the same time practicing, having a practice that is oriented around peace helps. Well, it helps me in any case, and that's already one person that's helping. But it's a very complicated situation, it's true.
But when I'm hearing this, and it's important to notice, okay, so we see the thoughts, feelings, views, memories, all of this stuff that comes up when we, as reacting to something, which are these are these are side products of subjectivity. So the self, I think this, I feel that, all of this. It's just the natural functioning of our mind. Where we get into trouble is when we mistake that natural functioning and all that stuff that comes up as something fixed, rigid, and permanent. And that's why opening to the communal web of interconnection helps us to not fixate, objectify, become rigid about what I'm feeling, my emotion, my thought, my view, my memory. It's just the natural functioning of mind, right? Something like that. And that, that's basically the difference between delusion and, we have the koan delusion as enlightenment or something. But the delude when we are deluded, we're fixating and objectifying things. And when we can let go, when we, detach, as Dogen said, or something, not ignore, doesn't mean to ignore it, but it's to not see it. It's the absence of fixation and what do we call it? Reification, making it into a thing. That's what, when we talk about the enlightened mind, that's it. It's the absence of that fixation, whereas the deluded mind is fixating. And we know that these emotions that come up around things, I'm just using things, issues, subjects, whatever. We know that it can be very painful and oppressive, and we don't know what to do about it. And so we find coping strategies which involve not looking at it so much, which is healthy, right? To, save yourself this excessive, when you can tell that it's, not really the appropriate behavior, to become aware of that and say, okay, I'm going to not indulge in that inappropriate behavior. So, like, disconnecting Le Monde or finding different ways to stay informed or something. It doesn't mean ignorance, but it also means not fixating on whatever it is, not making it rigid and rigid identification, something like that. Because all of that stuff that's coming up is just the natural order of mind. Like we chant in the Oriokhi, because we want to be free from clinging, we must be free from greed. Because we want the natural order of mind to be free from clinging, we must be free from greed. So it's the greediness that is giving that color to the natural order of mind. So it's the fact that we're making it into something solid that then colors the natural order of our mind. It's important to see this, our emotions and how, we relate to whatever is happening. And most of what's happening is because people are fixating. If you fix on these people are bad and these people are good, and I want this to happen, and I want to accumulate a lot of money, and I want to, look good or something, well, then there's a certain amount of behavior, as we always say. We can cultivate something wholesome or we can cultivate something harmful. And the first step towards that is not attaching to our identity of self and our fixations and clinging and making everything permanent. All of us are here because we're aware of that to some extent. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. There would be no reason to do what we do with our sitting practice and our way of opening to impermanence and interconnection. There would be no, if we didn't on some level understand it, we wouldn't do it. That's the good news, right? And sharing it, then joining this communal web helps us to not be so attached to our thing. So that talking circle is just brilliant for that because we're not so attached to what's happening for me at this moment. It's being the last one in the circle was such a powerful thing because it just was like one thing after another and then another and another and just such. The 10,000 things were present in that circle.
I feel very strongly these days, maybe more than ever, than when I practice, when we practice together, I always feel, wow, we are really kind of maintaining this candle, this light that is absolutely essential, and we cannot fail. We cannot fail. it's very strong.
Yeah, nice image. So when you say we cannot fail, does it mean we must not fail, or is it we can't fail?
Well, I
Or maybe.
just feel in the sense I feel we just keep on going because it's essential for oneself and for the others and for everyone. And it's like it's my responsibility if there it's the responsibility of everyone to just keep maintaining the wisdom that is present in this practice and that heals. And I don't know, when yesterday I hear my friend talking about his brother-in-law just like moving towards it was when I thought about it today, I thought, well, it's all about clinging actually. It's all about clinging to an identity. So again, we always go back to the same thing. Always go, it's whether it's like individual, collective, it's a war, it's like it always goes back to the same thing. And so it's like we the practice gives us a similar experience as the astronauts have. It's just a different perspective. It gives suddenly a perspective that like you can't go back. Suddenly it's like, yeah, I saw the emptiness of it. I can't go back. And yet I see the devastation when we go in that we slide in that direction.
Yep, go ahead, Claudia. Yeah.
Yes, I was because I was thinking since you said that the astronaut they said that from the shuttle they saw the Earth and they say oh okay so that's it looks like and so I was kind of I felt some envy. Like I said, oh yes, I would like to be in the shuttle and watch the Earth from there. But as a matter of fact, we are in the shuttle. I mean, doing this practice, we are in the shuttle. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Amazing that this practice, this ancient practice, is, and they spent how many millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars and time making this rocket to see that. It's good that they do it, but it's nice to hear that they have that experience. But as you say, we can just sit down on a cushion and have that experience. Yeah.
Yeah, watching a few shots of them, I get a real strong Sangha feeling from them, that they're really hooked into each other, especially when your friend Joe, I don't even want to say his name anymore, when Trump was talking to them, there was, now maybe I made it up, but I got this feeling sort of like, okay, here we go, we've planned for this. We'll just play him along. Yeah, cool, right, yeah, go. But they were mocking him somehow. Just in the way they looked at each other. The same way we do, and the way looks can cross during a retreat, and you know exactly what the other person is on about.
Well, there was an interesting moment too in that exchange with Trump. I didn't see all of it, but where there was a long silence, like this awkward silence, and one of the, like the captain of the ship actually grabbed the microphone that was floating around in the ship. He grabbed the microphone and he said, "Houston, are you there? We were just wondering if we were still connected," because there was this long silence, but they were kind of smiling when they said that, and then you heard Trump say, "Yeah, I'm still here," or something. But there was this awkward, yeah. And if you think about it, okay, so you felt this Sangha feeling of them in that ship together. That is just like a miniature version of all of us. We're all in the same ship. We're all in the same place. We're all in this here. There's not separations, And when we can truly experience that, so we go on a retreat and we feel that. We go in a tiny spaceship, like, hurtling hundreds of thousands of, kilometers from the Earth out of the atmosphere. And it's probably more intense, that feeling of being all one. And yet it's here all the time. It's the truth of where we are right now. That changes then how we treat each other, how we relate to others, how we experience the moment, how we practice with what is right before our eyes, because what is right before our eyes is us. It's not other.
Thank you for sharing all this. I feel very tired right now, but so I wasn't up to saying much, but what you just said made me about how did you say it? Seeing what's in front of our eyes or something. I just this image just came up of I must have seen that on my way home or something, but I see it all the time. I bike through the Pont Neuf and Châtelet-Les Halles and so very, very, and the 6e, and so that's the heart of Paris. Very touristic. There's a lot of tourists, and I keep seeing these everyone with their head down, looking at their phone. So as and so what you just said, and so nothing. It was just like, how can you see when you have your head down, completely absorbed, or your headphones on, or whatever takes you away from what's just in front of you. Even more so maybe when you're traveling, because I mean you're not there to look at everything. You're supposed to be watching, or it's not you're supposed to be, but yeah, can you appreciate anything if you're not just looking and being there for that? Anyway.
Yep, that's the story of our practice. It's right here and we don't see it because we're looking somewhere else. The good news is it's right here. Bad news is we're looking somewhere else. That's not actually bad news either. So maybe we should stop there. It's almost time. Thank you, everyone, for joining.